This afternoon we want to continue our study in the book of Acts, and so if you have your Bibles with you, we're looking at Paul's journey. I should have put the map up to show you, because I think that would help, as Paul is now being shipped to Rome. I don't know how this is going to work, because I'll see if I can get it to work quickly. As you remember, the last few times we studied, Paul had been imprisoned in Caesarea, and he'd been before two governors and the king of Israel. The governors were appointed by the Roman emperor, and they were Felix, who was the governor when Paul was first brought to Caesarea, and Festus, who had taken Felix's position. And then King Agrippa had come down from Jerusalem. King Agrippa was the illegitimate king of Israel. Again, he was a great-grandson of Herod the Great. Herod the Great had been appointed that position, not because he God had appointed him, but men and those in the Roman Empire had appointed Herod to that position. I'm going to see if I can. This is the map that I want, I think. Paul had been in Caesarea Philippi, which is right here. And that's where he had been under a trial before Felix first. Many had been brought before Festus. And remember, Festus wanted to send him back to Jerusalem with the Jews and have all of the trial occur there, because he really said, this isn't about Roman law, it's about the religion of the Jews. And Paul did not want to go back to Jerusalem because he knew what was awaiting him there. They were going to try to kill him. And so he appealed to Rome. And as we saw on Wednesday night, Festus didn't know quite how to handle that, because he had no charges to send, even though he had told Paul, if you want to go to Rome, you'll go to Rome. But now he had to send a letter of why he was sending him to Caesar, and he didn't really have any good reason. And so he had King Agrippa, who was coming down to visit him with his wife Bernice. And this, as we shared a little bit on Wednesday night, I didn't get into it a lot, but Bernice was King Agrippa's sister. They were living in an incestuous relationship, and they were really a pagan people, although King Agrippa, because he was king of the Jews, he had studied Jewish law, he had studied the Torah, he knew about the prophets, and he Paul knew that he knew. And so Paul appealed to him, and we left it off with one of the saddest comments that are in the scriptures, when Agrippa said to Paul in verse 28 of Acts 26, after he'd listened to Paul give his testimony, and Paul challenged Agrippa to accept Christ and to believe what he understood was true, and Agrippa, believest thou the prophets? In verse 27, I know that thou believest. Then Agrippa said unto Paul, almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. And I just want to again share the three responses of these three men, Felix, Festus, and Agrippa. Felix trembled when he heard the gospel, because he knew judgment is real. He understood judgment because he was a man who meted out judgment. He also understood guilt, and that if one was guilty, judgment was due. And he, as he stood before Paul and listened to him, understood that he was guilty before a holy and righteous God, and he trembled, but he did not yield. And then we saw that Festus mocked. He mocked Paul. He mocked all that he said, and really said that Paul was a madman, and he was really being driven insane by all of these things that he was believing. And that is a common tactic of the world, to deflect the need for one to come to grips with our own relationship with God by just denying the messenger so that we reject the message. And then we saw Agrippa, who shared those words, which are just break one's heart, that he understood, but yet he did not receive, although he came so close. And now I just want to pick it up in verse 29. And Paul said, I would to God that not only thou, but also all that hear me this day, were both almost and altogether such as I am, except for these bonds. Just pause. In other words, Paul wanted everyone there to be a believer in Jesus, just as he was, and to be transformed by Christ, except he says, I don't want you to have to go to jail. I just want you to come to Jesus. And when they were gone, aside they talked between themselves, that is, Festus and Agrippa, saying, this man doeth nothing worthy of death or of bonds. Then said Agrippa unto Festus, this man might have been set at liberty if he had not appealed unto Caesar. And so Paul had appealed to Caesar. That appeal could not be broken. It had to be worked through. And so Paul had to be sent to Rome. Now, Paul knew that he was supposed to go to Rome. He'd been wanting to go to Rome. We see that in the statements that he's made throughout his first three missionary journeys, how that his desire was to go to Rome. God had placed in his heart the need to go there. Why? Well, from Paul's letters that we see that he wrote, his prison letters while he was in Rome, we understand some things. There were people that Paul would meet there who would end up becoming believers in Jesus. Because in one of his letters he closes with his salutations and he says, and greetings from all those who are believers in the house of Caesar. And so we know that there were Christians that came to Christ, and in all likelihood because of the witness of the Apostle Paul during his years of imprisonment in Rome. Paul also was going to have more opportunities because of going to Rome. Now he had to take a ship. They sent him by ship. They didn't want to go land. As you can see here on this map, when you would take a ship to Rome, they would go this way, and then they'd go over here. Where if they went by land, they'd have to go up here, around here, all the way up here, and then you'd still end up taking a ship across the channel. And so it was a lot quicker to take a ship to go to Rome. The time of year that they're leaving, it's the time of year when there can be storms in the Mediterranean. You've probably heard of storms in the North Atlantic, and they call them nor'westers, or nor'easters rather, and they are storms that come off the ocean, and they're very strong, and oftentimes ships will get into real trouble if they get caught in a strong one of these strong storms off the Atlantic coast in northeastern United States. Well, that same type of storm would come in the Mediterranean. The Mediterranean is a large body of water, and you get winds that would come down off of these mountains that are located up in here. They come down in the Mediterranean, and they have these storms, and the winds, the ones that Paul are going to be looking at, they're going to be actually be coming from the northeast this direction, and they're going to cause tremendous trouble. Well, that's what we're going to look at. Paul is boarding the ship, getting ready to go to Rome, and let's pick it up in chapter 27. And when it was determined that we should sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and certain other prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus' band. And entering into the ship at Adramatium, we launched, meaning to sail by the coasts of Asia, one Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, being with us. And the next day we touched at Sidon, and Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go unto his friends to refresh himself. And so when they went to the first stop that they had at Sidon, Paul was allowed to go ashore and visit with his fellow Christians. Even Julius understood that this man was not a criminal, and he really didn't need to be guarded as the other men who were criminals on that ship. And verse 4, and when he had launched from thence, he sailed to Cyprus because the winds were contrary. And Cyprus is this island here, so they stopped at Sidon, Tyre and Sidon, and that would be right here. And then they sailed to Cyprus, and they began to encounter bad weather already when they were at Cyprus. Cyprus is a long way from Malta. There's Malta right there, and that's way over here is where Malta is. And so that's where they're going to end up having a shipwreck. So they've got a long way to go to get there, but they're at Cyprus right now, and they're already encountering some bad weather. And when we had sailed slowly many days and scarce were come over against Cnidus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under Crete and over against Salamone. And so they went over here, and this is where this other island is. And so they went on the underside of Crete. And again, while they're at Crete is when they begin to encounter some really bad weather. And it says in verse 10, and he said unto them, or verse 9, now when much time was spent, and when sailing was now dangerous because of the fast was already now past, Paul admonished them. Oh, I'm sorry, I jumped a couple verses. Let's go back to verse 6. And there was a centurion on the ship of Alexandria sailing into Italy, and he put us therein. And when we had sailed slowly many days, and scarce were come over against Cnidus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under Crete and over against Salamone. And hardly passing it, came unto a place which is called the Fair Havens, nigh whereunto was the city of Lycia. And so the Fair Havens are right in here, and the city of Lycia is right there. And so they were on the bottom side of Crete, and that's where they had were at this time. Now when much time was spent sailing, and when sailing was now dangerous because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them and said unto them, sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, and not only to the lading and ship, but also of our lives. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken of by Paul. And so Paul was giving him a warning, but the master wanted to get his load there. We're going to see that the load that they're carrying is mainly grain, and it's wheat that's coming from Israel, and it's going to Italy. And so their ship is loaded with grain, and it's loaded with other goods. And then a secondary load is these prisoners that are being taken to Rome. The main concern they want to get their grain to Italy so they can make their money. So the master of the ship is saying, no, don't worry. Don't listen to this Hebrew. Why do you want to listen to a guy that's not a sailor? I'm telling you, it's going to be safe. It'll be okay. Don't listen to him who says that the ship is going to be lost and lives will be lost as well. It's not going to happen. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, the Morport advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain Phinis, and there to winter, which is an haven of Crete, and lieth toward the southwest and northwest. And where they were going to go is up here, and this is where they wanted to winter. And so that's where they're going to try and go. The only problem is the winds and the storm that's coming won't allow them to go that way, and they're going to end up having to turn, and then they end up out here in the ocean in the middle of the Mediterranean. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, losing thence, they sailed close by Crete. So if you got a south wind and you're going northwest, that's a good sign, right? So they thought, well, we'll just stay close to Crete. We'll go, and we've got the correct wind, and that's what the master sailor said. But not long after there arose against it a tempestuous wind called a Euroclydon. And a Euroclydon is a hybrid word, half Greek and half Latin, meaning east-north, and standing for a treacherous east-northeast wind. And so all of a sudden, this soft south wind that was pushing them towards this port where they wanted to go turned into a strong east-northeast wind, and so that starts pushing them this way, okay? And they're going away from Crete, not towards it any longer, and not protected by the underside of the island. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phinis and there to winter. But we see they couldn't. And so verse 13, and when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, loosed thence, and they sailed close by Crete, but not long after there arose against it a tempestuous wind called a Euroclydon. And when the ship was caught and could not bear up under the wind, we let her drive. In other words, when they tried to adjust the sails, but they couldn't adjust the sails, and they had to just let the ship go where the ship's going to go, because otherwise they were in real danger. And so they just set the sails to the way the wind was blowing, and off they took, and this is where they started going. They started going out into the middle of the Mediterranean. And running under a certain island, which is called Claudia, we had much work to come by the boat. Okay? So they got to this little island. You can see this little dot right here, which is south of Crete. And that's Claudia. And when they got there, they had to try and shore up the ship because it was coming apart already. And which, when we had taken up, they used helps undergirding the ship and fearing lest they should fall into quicksands, strake sail, and so we were driven. Now, undergirdings, they took ropes, and this was not an easy task to do, especially when you're not in a good port and you're in the middle of a storm. But they had to take ropes and get them underneath the ship, bring them up around, and secure the ropes and tighten them to try and bring in the boards of the ship, because they were starting to come loose because of the weather. But they didn't get port on this little tiny island, because evidently there was quicksand there and unagreeable conditions to port, and they figured they'd lose everything if they waited there. And so they set out to sea again, and we being exceedingly tossed with the tempest, the next day they lightened the ship. And the third day we cast out with our own hands the tackling of the ship. And so they began to throw things overboard. First, the things they felt they didn't need, they left their cargo on, but then they started throwing over portions of equipment that they didn't need, and because they were trying to lighten the ship because they were having problems, and it would be with the waves. If you've ever seen ships on a really strong ocean wave, they go down and then they come back up, and sometimes if they get too low in the water when they're coming back up, guess what? The blade goes right over the top of the ship and it can sink it. And so they're trying to keep this thing on top of the water so it's not going to be diving into the water and they end up losing the ship. And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared and no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. And if you can imagine, at this particular time, they'd be out here somewhere. And the way that they sailed back then, they didn't have GPSs. And they didn't have computers. They went by the stars and the sun. And that's how you determined and set your course. And if you couldn't see stars and sun, and if your winds were so strong, you're just trying to, with all your might, to keep the ship on top of the water, you were in great danger of losing the whole ship. And that's what was happening with them. They didn't know exactly where they were at. They were starting to the ship was starting to get ready to sink, and so they were in grave danger. In verse 22, and now I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. And Paul is saying this. And what happened? Well, I'll go back to 21. But after a long abstinence, Paul stood forth in the midst of them and said, Sirs, you should have hearkened unto me, and not have loosed from Crete, and to have gained this harm and loss. In other words, he's saying, I tried to warn you, God had given me an understanding of what was going to happen, but you wouldn't listen. Now I need to have you listen to me now. Why? Because I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. The ship's going to be lost, but none of you will die. Now, how did Paul come to this knowledge? Well, Paul had been fasting and praying because of the situation. Guess what? Paul's probably the only one in the whole ship who's fasting and praying. Everybody else is probably crying out to whatever they believe in, whatever God, to help them, but they're not crying out to the true and the living God. Paul is, and God has revealed to him no one is going to lose their life if they do what he says. For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve, saying, Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar, and lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee. And so he's saying, I'm not going to let you sink, I'm not going to let you lose your life, and I'm going to allow all those that are with you to remain alive as well, but the ship will be lost. Therefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe that it shall be even as is told me. Howbeit, we must be cast upon a certain island. Now, I want you to look. There's Claudia. There's Malta. Do you see any islands in here? There is nothing there except open sea. There's what they call the shallows of Syrtis, but it's just a shallower place where the waters aren't so deep, but there is no island until you get all the way to Malta. And it says here, but when the 14th night was come, as we were driven up and down in Adria, about midnight, the shipmen deemed that they drew near some country. So they've been at sea now for 14 days, and they've been driven by this strong wind. It's kind of like a cyclone or a hurricane. And just tempestuous seas. And why did they feel that they were getting close to land? Well, it says, and they sounded and found it 20 fathoms, and when they had gone a little further, they sounded again and found it about 15 fathoms. And so they began to have these fathoms, and this is where they begin to lower the fathoms and realize and thinking that they were getting closer to land. Well, in some ways they were, but they were still quite a ways from Malta. And what are they doing now? Then fearing lest we should have fallen upon rocks, they cast four anchors out of the stern and wished for the day. And so they cast their anchors to try and make the ship secured and waited and hoped they could see daylight. And as the shipmen were about to flee the ship, well, what were they doing? The shipmen thought, oh, we're close to land. Well, let's not worry about the main ship. Let's get the lifeboats out. So we'll let the lifeboats out and let everybody else in the ship fend for themselves, but we're out of here because we think that we're close to land. Well, as you can see here, if this is where the shallows of Syrtis is where they were dropping their fathoms, and that's oftentimes what they would do is drop a weighted rope, and it would have knots on it that would show how deep it was going. And they were showing that it was getting shallower. However, they were still far from land, and they would have perished too had they got in the lifeboats, because their only chance would have been make it to the African shore, and I don't think they would be able to do that given the conditions. And so we see that, and while day was, and see verse, where was I? And verse 29, and then fearing lest we should have fallen upon rocks, they cast four anchors out on the eastern and listed for the day. And the shipmen were about to flee of the ship when they let down the boat into the sea under the color as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship. And so what they did is they're going to do it under the pretense of a lie. They were going to say, okay, we're going to let down these four anchors to get our, so we're secure till morning, and the only way we can do this is we have to let down these lifeboats to get the front anchors out. And all of a sudden, Paul realized that's not what they're really doing. They're really attempting to leave us in the lurch. Paul said unto the centurion and to the soldiers, except these abide in the ship, you cannot be saved. And so he's telling them, you don't let those shipmen off. And what do? Then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat and let her fall off. And so the lifeboat was not any longer allowed to be lowered into the sea. It was cast off into the sea. And while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat, saying, this day is the 14th day since you have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. And so they hadn't eaten anything for all those days. And so Paul is telling them, you need to take something to eat. Wherefore I pray to you, take some meat, for this is for your health. For there shall not an hair fall from the head of any of you. Okay? So none of them were going to perish. And when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when they had broken it, he began to eat. Now I want you to see one thing that Paul did here. This was probably this was so terrible. You have sailors ready to abandon ship, leave everything there. You have everybody probably very, very fearful, and Paul is calm. And what does this tell you? In the midst of no matter what trial you're in, the Lord has called us to give us peace in the face of difficulty. What do you think it would have been like if Paul would have just been totally out of his mind going, this is terrible, I don't know. No, there would have been nobody listening to him. But he was calm. Not only was he was calm because he knew what God had told him. He knew that God was in control. And he knew that God had promised him that he needed to get to Rome. And so he just was calm in the presence of all this turmoil that's going on, and he tells the people, this is what you've got to do. Then were they all of good cheer, and they also took some meat. So Paul's calmness changed their attitudes. And they were all in the ship, 260 souls, 276 people were in the ship that day. And when they had eaten enough, and they lightened the ship, and cast out the wheat into the sea. And so now you know they're getting serious about the danger they're in when they start to cast their cargo, their main money-making cargo, into the sea. They're casting the grain. And when it was day, they knew not the land, but they discovered a certain creek with a shore into which they were minded, if it was possible, to thrust the ship. And that creek would have been on this little island right here, Malta. And when they had taken up the anchors and committed themselves unto the sea and loosed the rudder bands and hoisted the mainsail to the wind and made toward shore, and falling into the place where the two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and fore part struck fast and remained unmovable, but the under part was broken with the violence of the waves. And what happens, if you see, Malta is where? It's right here on the south end, and you've got sea there, and you've got sea there. You've got currents coming this way, you've got currents coming that way, and guess where they meet? Right there. And if you've ever been anywhere like to somewhere on the ocean, and you've been out on a point where the currents are coming from two different directions, and you've got waves coming from this direction and waves coming from that direction, and see how they meet, there's great tumult. They're just tumultuous when they meet. There's a lot of, you don't want to go swimming there, put it that way. And that's what they had come to when they hoisted sail. That's where they ended up, was right on that point where all these waves are coming, and it began to tear the ship totally apart. And then they ended up landing on some rocks, with the front part of the ship and the back part of the ship being ripped apart by these waves, and they can't get it off the rocks, and so it's a hopeless situation. So what are they going to do? And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners. Okay? Well, that's what the head of the soldiers said to do. Well, let's kill the prisoners. Why? Because if you lose prisoners and you're a Roman soldier, guess who gets to die? You get to die. Remember why when Peter was let out of jail by the angels, there was a great there was a whole bunch of concern by the soldiers that were protecting him, because they didn't know how it happened. Their necks were in the line, because he was supposed to be guarded by them. That was the same thing here. So rather than lose prisoners, they were going to kill them all. But Paul says, but the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept him for their purpose, and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land, and the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of ship. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land. And just as Paul had told them, you stay with the ship, nobody leaves, and we'll all be saved, but the ship is going to be lost. And God had revealed that to him. And that's exactly what happened, and they're on the island of Malta, which is a little tiny island off of Sicily. And Malta is where some interesting things are going to happen, and I want you to see that even when we're in the midst of turmoil that we don't understand why it's there, God places us in situations to be a witness and testimony. Wednesday we're going to see how God's going to use Paul in the face of what appeared to be just total disaster. The ship had sunk. Nobody had been lost, just as God had told Paul, but how was he going to get to Rome, and what was the purpose in the sinking of the ship and all this going on? Well, there's people that are going to hear the gospel that would have heard it no other way unless Paul had this happen. Let's just close in prayer. Lord, I pray that you would help us to understand that when things happen in our life where everything's in turmoil and we just don't know what's happening, guess what? You're in control. And Father, if we listen to you and do what you direct and say, you will take that which Satan means for evil and the world means for our destruction, yet you would bring and not only good out of it, but you will also use it for your glory and to touch people's lives. Lord, now I pray that you just be with us and help us as we face situations in the week ahead. Lord, may we constantly look to you and rely on you and seek direction from you, even in the face of the tempestuous seas of life. This we'd ask in Jesus' name. Amen. In closing, if you turn to His grace is greater. Let's see. What is it?